the Asus Strix Fury is a full-length graphics card. It is the little brother to the Fury X, right? So if you remember, we had the Fury X launch with its integrated water cooler, and then we had the Fury launch, which is the same Fiji GPU with fewer shaders enabled. So they disable a couple of hundred of those shaders, I believe. And you get small disadvantages in like texture counts and ROPs and that type of stuff as well. But you get the same 4 gigs of memory, high bandwidth memory capable of 512 gigabytes per second of memory bandwidth, right? All the technology is still the same. And we've talked about the Fury before when I had the Sapphire card. The Asus card here differs in a couple of ways. One, it looks very different. It has a different cooler. Sure. Implementation on it. The Strix line, their branding for it is that of an owl, and the idea is that it's supposed to be performance when you need it but quiet when you don't type of thing. And it was the first company that was the first line to really introduce the idea of the fans turning off completely when your GPU was in idle or under a certain, I think like under 65 or under 60C, something like that. So that still permeates through the Strix Fury. What's interesting here is that the PCB is very different. You look at that shot. You've got this backplate that kind of covers everything. The red square is actually an outline of the GPU. Again, it gives you an idea of how massive the Fiji GPU is with its high bandwidth memory implementation on it, on an interposer piece of silicon. That is like a support protector for the graphics card, right? To keep the PCB from warping over extended time, right? Hanging upside down is the idea behind that. But the PCB itself on the Asus card is like full length. It's like a full length, 10.5 inch, 11 inch PCB that you would see on a flagship video card. If you remember back to the Fury X and the Fury from Sapphire, those were both using 7.5 inch PCBs. It was part of the interesting thing, right? The Fury X had this very small card form factor with an external water cooler. And all Sapphire did was take that same card and slap a giant heatsink on it. And the heatsink extended well past the PCB, and they had some kind of support structure behind it for that. What Asus did is they built their own PCB for it, kind of space things out a little bit, give them a little bit more room to breathe, a little bit more room for, you know, either thermal dissipation or better trace routing or any number of things that they could have updated in this, because they did improve power delivery on it over reference. And you can do that, you know, whether or not it has any actual effect on performance, debatable, but it is a unique design decision, if nothing else. Yeah, you can see that shot there where they kind of took the solid caps there as well as the inductors and kind of moved them out a little bit, didn't cramp their style as much. But you can see even on the right-hand side, there's a lot of empty PCB space that you're not used to seeing on a high-end discrete graphics card, for example. So that's kind of the major design difference. Performance-wise, the Asus card and the Sapphire card are nearly identical in pretty much every aspect, right? Out-of-the-box performance, up to 1,000 megahertz, pretty much runs at 1,000 megahertz all the time. The overclocking capability of this card is really also identical to that of the Fury, also kind of identical to that of the Fury X, in that we didn't get much out of it. That's been one of the biggest complaints from people after the Fury X announcement, where AMD kind of did a live stream and they got on stage and they talked about the design, was that they claimed there was going to be significant overclocking headroom on these parts because of the coolers and the GPU design and all that stuff. And that just did not turn out to be the case. These GPUs do not overclock. We're kind of at, whether it be a voltage limit or a thermal limit. I don't think we're at a thermal limit because of the Fury X running at 55C, but we're at a voltage limit or some other limit on this piece of silicon. We were only able to push the Asus Strix Fury from 1,000 to 1,050 megahertz. So you're looking at, what is that, 5% increase in clock speed? Not fantastic. And then obviously you're not even going to get that full 5% improvement in actual gaming. You're going to get probably closer to 2, 3, maybe 4% as you kind of distribute that overclock advantage across the board. But it is identical to what we saw in the Sapphire card, even though if you look at the last page of the review, the Strix R9 Fury temperatures are about 5 degrees lower than that of the Sapphire card, 70 degrees Celsius versus 75 degrees Celsius. That doesn't drastically change things, but it tells you that, you know, temperature is not really the limiting factor here with these particular products. The other thing, kind of, if you look at these cards that perform identically, how do they differentiate? It's on maybe thermals. It's on sound levels. The ASUS Strix Fury under a full gaming load is actually louder than the Sapphire Tri-X R9 Fury that we tested a few weeks back or a couple of months back. 35 dB versus 32 dB. It's still quieter than the R9 Fury X, which is the water-cooled, you know, massive beast flagship card that they released as well. And then what we noticed on this card is that on the Fury, because it's a custom PCB with custom components, no coil whine, no board whine. Obviously, there's no pumps and none of that. Everything high quality, as you kind of come to expect from some of the flagship ASUS cards, more or less. Not that we necessarily heard that on the Sapphire, but you run into a higher risk of it since it's using the reference PCB design, I guess. So it's quiet, but not as quiet as the Sapphire card. It does run cooler than the Sapphire card. The main limiting factor in all of these purchasing decisions is availability. So if you look, like Newegg, I think they don't have the ASUS one in stock anymore. They might have had the Sapphire. The Amazon listing last night when we recorded the podcast was listed at $569 and out of stock. Now it is listed at as in stock from some, you know, third-party reseller at $720 with $18.99 shipping charge. So, yeah, there's that. If you look on the Amazon, it is apparently still out of stock at $569 as well. So that's the main problem with this, with AMD's Fury launch in totality, is that they're not perfect products. They each had a couple little quirks, but they're really good products compared to what they've had in the past. Availability is the biggest concern, right? That you can't buy the parts even if you wanted to. And I'm sure that's frustrating for AMD as well as consumers. But that's kind of where we're at. If you can find the card at like the $569 MSRP, I think it's an excellent high-end graphics card. It's an excellent discrete GPU for people who are running at 2560 by 1440 or trying to dive into that 4K market. It's going to provide the power necessary to get started down that way as well.